www.themouthmagazine.com.
Howard Jones, once again, a very warm welcome to the Mouthcast.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I'm gonna be on board.
www.themouthmagazine.com.
It's actually just 6 months since we last spoke, and that was around the deluxe editions of Humans Lib and Dream Into Action, your first two albums.
Yeah.
This time we're going to talk about your imminent new album, Transform, which is out in a couple of weeks. I've been enjoying listening to it greatly over the past couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to hearing all about it. My sort of impression of it is that there's a sort of warm nostalgia about it without it becoming bogged down in the past.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shimmer, if you like, when you hold it up to the light in a particular way.
Yeah.
It's heavily electronic, so there's some common currency with your earliest work, but there are also these little musical nods to the past too, sort of quotes or even memes, if you like.
Yeah.
Now, I wondered about that, whether working on those two deluxe box sets so hard and for so long, and being immersed in that early to mid-80s material with all of its attendant memories and so on, whether that process actually informed the creation of this new record.
Mm. I think that everything that happens to you in your life sort of affects the work, what you produce. As you say, I was working on those, the first two albums being remastered and helping to listen through all the, the outtakes and the demos and the extended mixes. And so I was listening to a lot of that. And at the same time, I'd done a couple of tracks for the Eddie the Eagle album, which was an album based time-wise, was based in the 80s. So Gary Barlow asked me to write a couple of tracks that would fit in with that era, but also with the contemporary songs. And I thought that combination got me thinking of that's probably the direction the album could go in, really go back to the synths and the drum machines and back to my roots, really. It's funny to say that, but it was the route to where I started, yeah.
So musically then, let's talk about that a little bit. The setup that you used for this to write these songs. Mm. In the recent video for the single, you seem to hint at it being really akin to your early rigs. So is that where the songs started?
Well, I wouldn't say it was that. It's literal. It's more like the thinking behind it, which was like, when I started out doing a one-man show, I had to be limited to the gear that I had. So it was short sequence of notes, a groove, and maybe the groove would change a bit for the verse and the chorus. Arpeggios I could do, with my Juno 60 and things. So it was like trying to keep it empty, but really it's supplying enough harmonic information for the song to work. And so, yeah, although I literally didn't go back and pull the old synths out and because I'm, they're a bit, ropey, to be honest. but it was more the thinking and using technology of the day.
Yeah.
But thinking, why do people get so excited about these early songs? And I thought, there's a clarity to them. They are very much songs as well. So,
yeah.
Get back to doing that, which is what I really enjoy anyway. So, it was the right, I think, for the right time for me.
Just a side point there, that old gear, are you a hoarder? Have you kept all that stuff?
No, I'm not actually. I mean, I wish I'd kept more gear. I've got certain key pieces, and also, when an amazing new synth comes along, I will invest in that. But no, I'm not really. I mean, honestly, if you gave me the most primitive one oscillator synth, I could make music with that.
Yeah.
The idea is that your creativity really comes from within you. And it's great to have good gear, but it's not what produces great work. It's the thinking and the perseverance and trying to get something different and new. So it's nice to have all these things, but I don't, sometimes I often go back to the most basic software synth that's got, one oscillator, two oscillators in it. And it's very simple, and you work with that and you get a very clean, clear sound, and then sometimes you pile a load of stuff on top of each other and get a big sound. So it's what works at the time for the song and what moves me, sound wise and what gets me excited. And I think, if I get excited, I'm really hoping that the people who listen to this will get that as well.
Yeah. So I mentioned this idea of these little callbacks, some musical callbacks, but also ideas in a way, I think. Even the title Transform sort of harks back a little bit to that really early B-side Change the Man. This idea of if you want to change what's outside of you, progress yourself, do bits of work on yourself, change the inside.
That's right. That's where, I mean, that's the way I come at it. But I mean, I think it's important to work on a macro level as well, you know, and political macro level. But always my thing has been, you know, if you want to change the world, start with yourself and then go from there. because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take individual change in all of us. That's going to make a better society, more peaceful society, more respectful society. And so, you know, that's really where I've always been coming from, as you know.
Yeah, because what is a society other than the sum of its parts?
And if
all of those parts are changed for the better, then...
Exactly.
In the title song, there is this little bit where you say, it's still the same old me, which suggests that people do remain basically the same, or that there's a lot of work involved to move even a short distance. For you personally, has it been like that? Has it been hard work to get to be the person that you wanted to be?
Well, I think it's a life's work to work on oneself and develop yourself, because the aim, I think, is to be, as you know, is to fulfill your potential as a person, and everyone's got amazing potential in their life. And it is a life. It is a life's work to work towards it, but also realize that everyone else has this potential as well, and encourage and inspire people that you work with and people around you to do the same. But I'm always going to be a work in progress, you know, and I'm really happy about that, because it gives me somewhere to go, you know.
All the time.
But it's always been, you know, a huge part of you know, I'm trying to improve as a person. And sometimes that's a painful process, you know, to let go of old ways of thinking. And you know, as that song says, you know, you could drive Lewis Hamilton's car, you could win $1 billion, but those external things might change, but really the person inside will be the same unless we work on that, you know.
Because
you know, especially when you see a lot of people being, you know, obsessed with their body image and what they look like, and but actually you can change your face, make it, you know, you can be the most amazing looking person, but how do you feel inside? How's it going in there? You know, the external thing won't make you feel good unless you can feel really good about yourself and who you are. So that's really what I was trying to do with that song.
That could be Donald Trump's problem then, couldn't it?
Well, you know, I think we've all got to remember that. You know, if you took all the trappings away, would we still feel good about ourselves? And that's a big question, isn't it?
We we played in at the start of this podcast with the new song Beating Mr. Neg, which is, I think, a really fine addition to one of your particular lyrical canons, which is the really, really positive lyrics, the lyrics that can elevate you, keep you afloat even. And I'm sure you must have been aware throughout your career that your work has had an impact on people, and you know how wonderful for you and for them that it's been almost entirely a positive impact. But equally, that in itself must have put you in some difficult positions. The idea that someone, I don't know, might write to you with a problem of some great magnitude, and you would perhaps feel sort of on a bound to respond. Has that sort of attention been difficult to cope with?
I do feel responsible for the people that may hear what I do. So I take it very seriously. So that's why the lyrics are so considered. And there's no one word that isn't there for a reason. I'm aware of what you're saying, that there will be certain people, especially, who really take it to heart, and rightly so, because that's what art should do. You know. Then, you know, I mean, obviously, I can't. I mean, my job is, I think of it as being as the cheerleader, you know, encourager, and saying you can do this. You've got it in you. And everyone's got amazingly complex and difficult situations that they're in, and they will, you know, I can't possibly know those, you know, from a letter or things. So really, you know, to really help another person, you've got to know the whole background. You've got to know everything about them. And my work is meant to be like a general encouragement for people to believe in themselves, to really push themselves to realize their greatness of them, of the things they can do. And not be surprised when things go wrong, because they go wrong for everybody, and all great things are never achieved easily. So one needs to be realistic about all that. And I try and put that in the work. You know, that I'm more conscious of it now than I've probably ever been. It was more of instinctive when I started, but now, and I'm sort of hopefully know what I'm doing a bit more. But yeah, it is more considered.
www.themouthmagazine.com.
I'm fairly sure I picked up a little bit of a theme in this record, which is the digital age, the internet perhaps, that crops up. And I think the internet is perhaps the most far-reaching invention of our lifetime.
Yes.
What no one could have foreseen, other than David Bowie when he talked to Jeremy Paxman in 1999, of course, is the effect that the internet has had on human behaviour. We've seen a kind of mobilisation, if you like, a militancy. And one of the things that you and I have spoken about before was Donald Trump a little bit, but the state of the world, let's say.
Yeah.
And in relation to that rise of the right, what might be needed to effect change or offer resistance. And you said you were all for a bit more sort of Occupy Wall Street type stuff. So because the internet can quickly break down barriers, for want of a sort of longer way of putting it, as a consequence, it's actually changing democracy or governance, rather, which is pretty exciting, but it's a little bit terrifying as well, because who knows where that will lead us.
Yeah. What's interesting about the time we're living in is that nobody has ever experienced this before. So no generation of people alive on the planet have ever had access to so much information about what's actually going on in the world. I mean, you know, in past times it was simpler. You would get the news from the TV or your paper, but now you have input from every source that is flying at every single person on the planet, unless you bury your head in the sand or something. So people have far, far more awareness of the problems that are going on in the world. And do not really get the balance of all the great things that are happening as well. So that's another thing to deal with. I mean, my approach is take care of what's going on in your own environment. The most important thing is our behavior to each other. So whoever that we are connecting with in our lives, that's where we act out this desire for change. Because it starts with us individuals. I do get annoyed when people rail against politicians and systems and things, and that's all they do, but they don't actually do anything to make their own community more cohesive or more peaceful. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm coming from, is to light a fire for people to realize how amazing that is when you do that. Your sphere of influence is really important, and you can impact that with the way you are. And then that will reverberate out into society because everything's connected. That's the principle that I've lived by and try and get into the work.
Yeah. You yourself, are you a heavy internet user? I mean, you have a good presence on there. You're on all platforms, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram and all that. But personally, are you into it as a tool or a pastime?
I don't think I'm a power user. You know, okay. I the thing that I do personally is Twitter. So everything on Twitter is me.
Yeah.
And I don't like to overburden people with tweets. So, you know, sometimes it won't maybe be one a week or two a week, or, you know, and I don't want to become a pain. because if people start flooding me with stuff, I just turn off. So
yeah, you're a gentlemanly tweeter then.
I try to make it count. No, I'm not. I mean, I'm very, you know, kind of, you know, most of the time busy doing what I do. But I do, it's important to keep an eye on everything and,
of course,
you know what's going on. Like, it's really important that we do know what's going on. But I'm not online all the time, no. I'm definitely not, no.
Well, there's a lovely song on this album called Mother, which I think is your way of expressing your gratitude to your mum, Thelma, and her influence on your life, in your development as a person, your characteristics, your good manners and all of that. But also, of course, she ran your fan club.
I
would imagine that song was in some ways very easy and very natural to write, but also quite difficult.
I mean, it took me a few years after she passed away to even think about it. I knew I would have to do it because that's my way of, I don't know, resolving it in my head as writing a song about the thing, you know, the big issues. And I wanted to write it in the simplest possible words, so there's no ambiguity at all there, you know.
Yes.
It's like incredibly straightforward. And I was thinking of the people who would hear it and how they felt about their mothers, and that how songs can really help to bring those feelings out, because they need to be expressed. I mean, that gratitude does need to be expressed, even when one has had a difficult time with one's parents.
Mm.
Still, your mother gave you life and almost died bearing you and all that, you know.
Mm.
And I found it really difficult to write because I was just in tears the whole time thinking about her, which I think was really good, and it came through in the music and everything. And I hope people feel the same when they listen to it, because I just feels like almost one of the most basic feelings that one can have as a human being, of that towards one's mother. And
yeah.
So I just really tried to capture it. And I hope I have.
Yeah, I think so. And I think in a wider sense, it could actually apply to women and not just mothers,
mm.
I think, as the, mm. you know, as the yeah. mothers of the world, if you like, the
yeah.
nurturers, the ones who have sacrificed
yes.
the
yes.
most to get us to where we are today
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
I actually met your mum once after one of your gigs, and she was really lovely, actually, really, really friendly.
Yes, amazing.
And I have this very fond memory of her just giving you just a little bit of a ticking off. A couple of us were kind of hanging around to meet you, and you were trying to sneak out the back door, and she sort of gave you the, you know, the crook round the neck. Howard, these people are waiting for you. So that was really funny.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the amount of fans that my mum and dad actually invited to the house, you know, gave them tea, picked
wow.
them up at the station, brought them home, gave them tea, you know, let them see all this memorabilia they had. And
lovely.
They were amazing. And
yeah.
I couldn't have been represented in a nicer, kinder way, you know. And so I have such gratitude to them.
Yeah, she was particularly warm lady, I found. But
yeah.
Your tour coming up,
yeah.
35th anniversary of Humans Lib, and
yeah.
also the Transform stuff in there, and I think they're reasonably close bedfellows, so it's sure to be a really satisfying set that you put together. But will it be a band, or will it be, you know, just you and the gear?
It's going to be, there's four of us in the band, including myself, so it's mainly keyboards, three keyboard players. It's in keeping with the album, and also with Humans Lib, to be honest, as well. So, and then Robin, my guitarist, is playing as well. And I'm going to do a few songs at the piano, just acoustically, like I used to do, actually, in the early days. I always
yeah.
used to
yeah.
go to the piano and like do maybe one or two songs. And so it's going to be mainly banging, you know, electronic. You know, we've worked for months trying to make these songs sound amazing live. And what we've also done, gone back to the older material and brought it into line with the sound of the new album. So we've added a few bits and
right.
changed bass drum sounds and things. So obviously not making it unrecognizable or anything, but just giving a bit of a facelift. And so that when I play, you know, I'm going to play one older song, one from the album, I'm going to intersperse them like that. So it should feel like that it's a seamless between one and the other, you know, so they all feel like they were written yesterday. you know that's what I'm trying to achieve.
Great. Well, Howard, thanks once again for a chat. It's been lovely to talk to you, and look forward to the next time.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you. Thanks, Steve.
www.themouthmagazine.com